13, text 11.
Karoti kama vasagaya.
Karoti kama
vasaga. Kamanya vindritendriya. Dukkha darkani samspayam. Dukkha darkani samspayam. Rajo vega vimohita.
Rajo vega
vimohita.
Rajo vega vimohita.
Karoti.
Performs.
Kama.
Of material desires.
Vasha.
Under the control.
Ga.
Having gone.
Kamani,
fruitive activities.
Avijita,
uncontrolled.
Indriya,
whose senses.
Dukkha,
unhappiness.
Udakani,
bringing as a future result.
Sampashyan,
seeing clearly.
Raja,
of the mode of passion.
Vega,
by the force.
Vimohita,
bewildered. Translation: one who does not control the material senses comes under the control of material desires and is thus bewildered by the strong waves of the modes of passion. Such a person executes material activities, although clearly seeing that the results will be future unhappiness. So there's no purport to this one, so we'll read the next one. Rajastamobhyam yadapi vivan vishipta depuna atadrito manoyuna yan daso dristiya na sajate. Although the intelligence of a learned person may be bewildered by the modes of passion and ignorance, he should again carefully bring the mind under control by clearly seeing the contamination of the modes of nature. He does not become attached. Again, no purport, so we'll read the next one. Apramato nujujita manoma paryam chayam ani vino yatakalam jitta svato jitasana. A person should be attentive and grave and never lazy or morose. Mastering the yoga procedures of breathing and sitting properly, one should practice fixing the mind on me at dawn, noon, and sunset, and thus gradually the mind should be completely absorbed in me. Again, no purport. So the next one is Etavan Yoga Adisto Machichai Sanakal Dibhi Sarvato Mana Akritya Mai Adhya Veshyate Yatam. The actual yoga system as taught by my devotees, headed by Sanat Kumar, is simply this. Having withdrawn the mind from other objects, one should directly and appropriately absorb it in me. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The word yata, accordingly or properly, indicates that like Uddhava, one should hear directly from Lord Krishna or his bona fide representative and directly Adha, fix the mind in Lord Krishna. Omagyana timiranda shyaganandjana shalakeya chakshurumilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Nama om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Shimadi Hridayananda Goswami Niti Namine. Nama om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Shimadi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharine. Devasesha Shunyavari Pashachade Shatarine. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this three verses here that I've read, that's text 11, text 12, text 13 and text 14, four verses actually. The translation to the first one who does not control the material senses comes under the control of material desires and is thus bewildered by the strong waves of the mode of passion. Such a person executes material activities, although clearly seeing that the result will be future unhappiness. And this was nicely explained by Keshava Prabhu yesterday about how any material thing that we try to enjoy ultimately has a negative result at the end. He gave that example of the Melbourne show, and that was nicely presented. It was a very nice class. And similarly, you know how people, when we did Sankirtan, when we go and do Sankirtan, and we go to these places where people are anticipating having a good time, and then you see them walking in with big smiles and everything, but then when they come out, they're completely frowning, you know, because the kids have given them hell, they've spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars, they're fried, they're hot, it's like so much anticipation, and in the end, so much suffering. So a similar situation is afoot with the grand final, the football grand finals coming up. And so many people throughout the whole year have had ups and downs following their particular teams. So much expectation, so much hoping that their team is going to succeed. Because if they succeed, then they will have enjoyment and fulfillment. But then when they lose, there's so much desperation and so much negativity. So the ups and downs of following a team and so many things in the material world, there's all these positive things, but then in the end, if they're materially motivated, it just ends up in a negative suffering condition. So in these waves of modes of passion, one bounces backwards and forwards between excitement, harsha, and lamentation, soka. So all of a sudden everybody's, yeah, let's go to the grand final, and then the team loses and they all walk around like that. I remember when I used to go with my brother to the football, the grand final especially, you know, everybody's so euphoric in the beginning. Everybody walks into the MCG, our team is going to win. So much harsher, so much excitement. And then in the end, their shoulders droop and their flags and their banners and everything just hanging down. They're just walking out. So much lamentation. So one can act passionately, as it was mentioned yesterday in Keshava Prabhu's class, one can act passionately as long as we're not attached to the result and everything that we do is for the pleasure of Krishna. And, that he gave that example, Krishna Anusilanam, to work for Krishna, to dedicate one's words to Krishna and one's thoughts to Krishna, just as long as Krishna is happy. That's all we're concerned about. And if we're concerned about Krishna's happiness, then everything will be successful. Examples of devotees being in the mode of passion was we used to have these, we still do, but we had paraphernalia sankirtan marathons. And to do this sankirtan, one had to be pretty fired up, pretty passionate. Isn't that right, Veda? But we did it for Krishna. We didn't want any attachment. We weren't attached to the fruits of activities, and we did it for Krishna. So anyway, in these marathons, we would be really, really striving to do our best to please Krishna. So much so that sometimes it was quite outrageous, the things we used to do. The ladies would be collecting either with flags or with flowers, and they would collect all over, and they'd be very passionately chasing people and seeing if they would engage in service. To the extent Bhakti was reminding me how we used to, the ladies used to go to theatres, movie theatres, and buy a ticket to go to the movie theatre, and then crawl in between the aisles to people sitting in the theatre watching a movie, and all of a sudden someone would tap them on their leg. Would you like a flower for food for life? Yep, okay. And pay money, and then go to the next one, through the middle of a theatre. Can you imagine? I mean, that's something. We used to do, as guys, we used to do the paintings as well. We used to sell paintings. Again, this paraphernalia sales brought about this temple. And we had to do this service to bring in enough finance, because the finance wasn't coming from life membership and wasn't coming. It was coming, but not as much, from donations and so on and so forth. So the devotees that were in the temple had to be very passionately selling this paraphernalia. So we used to have the marathons, and that's when the height of passion would be there. And so we would go out in teams, At one stage I went out with Jambavati Mataji, she was my partner, and we went to Geelong, and we were doing Sankirtan in Geelong. Now that woman was so passionate, she was just amazing. And I couldn't keep up with her, she was just amazing. She'd, come on Bhakta, let's go, come on Bhakta, let's go. And we'd be out of the car with a roll of paintings, and then we'd come back and I may sell a $25 painting or whatever. And Jambavati would come back, I sold $500 worth of paintings, you know, she'd be off. Nothing for herself, it was just completely surrendering it all to Krishna. I went out with Gopinath Acharya one time, and he was such a crazy guy. He was so laid back, he was in the mode of goodness, you know, he was a brahmachari, he was just so casual, so peaceful and everything. And he would just stroll into a pub to sell these paintings, and you know, his wig would be sort of hanging off to the side, everybody knows he's a Hari, you know, so. And then he would be pinned up against the wall, someone would say, hey, you're a Hare Krishna and you're selling these paintings. Oh yeah, you know. And I'd so many times I'd walk into the pub and there he'd be, some guy would have him up against the wall, you know, I'm going to knock your block off, you know. And so I'd say, excuse me, I'll take him home, he's not well, you know, so we'd take him out. Other time, talk about passion. One time we were at this hotel, and sometimes I drive past and I keep thinking of what we did there. It's just outrageous. It was the Southern Aurora Hotel, and it was around about 10:30 at night or something, and we were selling paintings. We're still out there selling paintings. We'd go until 12 o'clock at night selling paintings. If you saw a light on in a house, somebody home. Hi, just in the area selling these beautiful paintings. Wonder if you'd be interested in having a look. 12 o'clock at night, you know. If there was nothing else open, we would go to brothels, we would go to hospitals, we'd go anywhere. Just so passionate for our service to Krishna. But all the time thinking, this is not for me, this is for Krishna. We're doing this for Melbourne Temple. We're going to go. So anyway, this one time we went to this pub. And Gopinath Acharya was there and he walked in and I walked in. And we started hitting up the people at the tables. You know, the manager's going, what the hell, what are these guys doing? You know, we're holding up these 3-foot by 2-foot paintings. You like that one? You like this one? You know? So the management came out, kicked Gopinath Acharya out, saw me, kicked me out. We're sitting in the car park, and Gopinath Acharya says, are we going to leave it at that or what? And I said, no, we're not. No. You know, and the passion was, he said, go on, Bhakta. Go and fix them up, mate. Because I had somebody that wanted to buy a painting in there before the management pulled us out. So I said, "Come on, Bhakta, come on, go get it." So I said, "All right, okay." So I crawled, went into the pub again. You know, I saw the management there, and I thought, "Oh God, how am I going to get to that table over there?" You know. So I got my roll, and I'm crawling on all fours. Right. This is a Saturday night, full on pub. Right. The music is playing, the band is up there, everything. And there's Bhakta, the 6-foot-5 guy with a roll of paintings, crawling in between the tables. Would you like to buy a painting? And then I got to the guy that wanted to buy the painting. And I'm underneath the table, holding up the painting. That one? What about that one? This one? And then finally he paid $200 or $300 for a painting. I rolled it up, gave it to him and crawled back out of the pub. So this was passion. We got the sale. So this was passion. But we did it passionately for Krishna. Because everything was for his pleasure. And we collected thousands and thousands of dollars for Krishna's pleasure. And it was that effort that actually got the temple to where it is today. All the efforts of all the devotees like that had to be passionate. We had to be passionate. So passion is good if you use it in the service of Krishna. But a devotee is always dhira, is steady, is sober, and restrains the minds by spiritual practice. We restrain the propensity for enjoying material things by spiritual practice, by following a spiritual procedure. And steadiness, and focusing always on how I can please Krishna. Always focusing, how can I please Krishna? A whole day should be in some way or another thinking, how can I please Krishna? How can I do this? How can I do this better? So on and so forth. So it's not a selfish enjoyment. It's a selfless enjoyment that we're after. And an intelligent person does not take pleasure in something that has a beginning and an end. Our devotional service to Krishna is everlasting. It's never stopping. It never ceases. It just increases in volume. But in material pleasure, it has a beginning and an end. And I was just researching that in Bhagavad Gita just before I started, and there's a verse in chapter 5, text 22. Yehi sampashacha bhoga dukha yona ya evate ajavantya kunteya nateshu ramate buddha. The translation Prabhupada gives here is, an intelligent person does not take part in the process of misery which are due to contact with the material senses, O son of Kunti. Such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so a wise man does not delight in them. So they understand that any material pleasure has a beginning and an end, and I won't take part in them. Material sense pleasures are due to the contact with material senses, which are all temporary because the body itself is temporary. A liberated soul is not interested in anything which is temporary, knowing well the joys of transcendental pleasure. How can a liberated soul agree to enjoy false pleasure? In the Padma Purana it is said, the mystics derive unlimited transcendental pleasure from the absolute truth, and therefore the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, is known as Rama. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, in 5.5.1, my dear sons, there is no reason to labour very hard for sense pleasure while in this human form of life. Such pleasures are available to the stool-eating hogs. Rather, you should undergo penance in this life by which your existence will be purified. As a result of that purification, you will be able to enjoy unlimited transcendental bliss. Therefore, those who are true yogis or learned transcendentalists are not attracted by sense pleasure, which are the cause of continuous material existence. The more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he is entrapped in material miseries. So the more we seek out material pleasures, the more we're going to be stuck in material miseries. So it's easy to get addicted to material sense pleasure, as we can see out there in the material world. The next verse that we read here was, although an intelligent person, a learned person, may be bewildered by the modes of passion and ignorance, he should again carefully bring the mind under control by clearly seeing the contamination of the modes of nature, and he does not become attached. So we were talking with the Chintarupa yesterday just about growing old, and how when a person first comes to Krishna consciousness or any religious movement at times, there's like this initial surge of euphoria. You know, there's a religious experience, euphoric experience, that sort of overrides everything, and you become really gung-ho and it's really far out and everything is fantastic. That usually doesn't last. And then what happens is that somehow or other you find out, hey, hang on a tick, I've got a few attachments and I've got a few desires still attached to material enjoyment. And some people, after they've been in the movement for a period of time, may fall away because of those attachments, because of those desires that we had. But here it is saying that a learned person may be bewildered by the modes of passion. So even a learned person may become overwhelmed. We've seen that. So many even so-called advanced devotees may have fallen away for a period of time. But then it says here that he should again carefully bring the mind under control. And then by clearly seeing the contamination of modes of nature, he does not become attached. So he or she, it should be careful about bringing the mind under control. Now, as a person grows older, there's a real, and I'm experiencing that in people of our age, from, you know, start to experience this real, you see it in my family members and friends that we have of the same age, they feel a real, oh God, it's all slipping away. My youth is slipping away. When we're young, we don't care for the future. It's all happening. But then when you actually start to turn 50, 55, and so on and so forth, you start to realize it's all slipping away. And men in particular feel that they can never regain that youth again until the next lifetime. But in this lifetime, they strive like anything to maintain their youth. They'll take up a gym course, or they'll dye their hair, or they'll do all these different things, like buy a far-out convertible red car or something like that, just to, yes, I'm still vital, I'm still young, I'm still attractive, you know, desperate. And from a devotee point of view, it's actually quite funny to watch. But it even happens to devotees. And similarly, with ladies, that also happens. As they grow older, there's still that, oh, now my youth is gone, you know, and I used to be, and they see pictures of how they used to look. Oh, I used to look so beautiful. And now what's happened? And so for a materialist, there's a lot of lamentation there, you know. There's a lot of regret. Oh, I can't get my youth back. And then to couple that, a woman also has to deal with menopause, you know, where the hormones are taking over and it's just the whole emotional soup that's going on, and the mind is so hard to control at that stage. So as we get older, it's even harder to control this mind. But we have to do it. We have to make this effort. And the only way that we could possibly do that is to just remain fixed in understanding that all we have to do is serve Krishna. All we have to do is make sure we please Krishna. That's why the vanaprastha stage in devotional life is so very, very important. All activities. When we're young, we sort of can shrug off things and we can run businesses and we can be vital. But when we're getting older, we see everything slipping away, and you can become very depressed about your position. And so and lamentation takes hold. And there are so many people that are thinking, oh, I can't regain my youth, I've lost everything. So the only way for a devotee to actually really conquer the mind, to fix the mind, to become dhira, is to actually understand that the only way I can do that is to just give everything over to Krishna. Especially in this later part of life, to just surrender everything to Krishna. And just see Krishna as the centre. There's no question of being happy if we're sincerely... There's no question of being unhappy if we sincerely try to make Krishna happy and see Krishna in everything that we do. We must try not to worry about the results, and that's the main thing. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that a person that teaches his philosophy of Krishna consciousness, or tries to teach his philosophy of Krishna consciousness, this Bhagavad Gita, he is the most dear to me. So someone that is trying to enlighten other people is the most dear to me. So especially for any age in Krishna consciousness, our duty is to try and present this philosophy as best we can to everyone that we come in contact with, to give this knowledge to everyone that we come in contact with. And we will get the transcendental enjoyment from that, as well as the person that we are talking to will get great benefit from that as well. An interesting scenario that happened yesterday, just as far as experiencing transcendental pleasure or enjoyment, because it was just to please Krishna. We had this opportunity of teaching, giving a lecture, a talk at Gopal's, and this is the fourth time I've done it, to home economics teachers. Home economics teachers. These are teachers that teach cooking at high school, right? And they have like a period of time when they have to revise their training. And so any new rules or directions in that particular subject, they have to have a refresher. So one of the parts of their curriculum nowadays is to go to a vegetarian institution and learn about vegetarianism. Because vegetarianism is rising in the community. There are a lot more people that are vegetarian for health reasons, as well as for moral and principled reasons. But so they come to the Hare Krishnas, because if you're talking vegetarian, well, who else to go to but the Haris, right? So anyway, we made arrangements, and we had 10 people there yesterday. And I was able to explain about Krishna consciousness and about vegetarianism and so on and so forth. And they were really pleased. They were really happy. You could see they were asking many, many questions. One lady said, you know, Bhakta, I could sit here and ask questions about spirituality all day long. And she was just so nice, you know. The people were just so nice. But what happens is that by our endeavours to preach, by Krishna giving me this opportunity to teach and talk to these people, befriend these people, what they are going to do is, the upcoming young children, they'll have a favourable idea about vegetarianism and they'll have a favourable idea about Krishna consciousness. They were so absorbed in Korma's cooking courses, three of them are going to do his cooking course, and then after the talk, they actually took prasadam, and they loved the prasadam. So, you could actually see them, this is nice, and so you see them becoming uplifted. So from a devotee's point of view, being given that opportunity to serve in that way, there's transcendental enjoyment, knowing that Krishna is pleased. Knowing that what I've attempted to do here, tried to do, made an effort to do, tried to do my best, Krishna is pleased with that. And you feel it within your heart. And that is a great, great feeling. That's real feeling. That's real happiness. So knowing that Krishna is pleased is a very important factor in our devotional service, and we strive for that. So if we just try to please Krishna, true enjoyment, real enjoyment, is assured. There's no two ways about it. If we try to please Krishna in everything we do, sometimes we may not be successful. We may be given a task to do, and we may not be able to fulfill it to the best of our abilities because of our own inadequacies or whatever, but if you tried, Krishna says he's happy. So the point is the trying. It's not necessarily it's a success. But if you want material enjoyment, you have to also own the suffering. If you're out there trying to enjoy for yourself and it's selfishness, then you have to also be responsible for the result of that, and that is lamentation and suffering. There was an interesting lecture that Ridhai Nanda Maharaj, my spiritual master, gave on this point, and he was saying it's like back in the 70s. He said, in the 70s, they used to have record sales, They don't do this anymore. Can you remember, Veda, when you used to buy a disc, a single, a 45? Was that before your time? Probably is. Yeah. So, you had the Hit Parade, top 10, and so on and so forth. So the kids would go out and buy a record, and it was just a single. And the hit song was on the front. That was, like the Beatles or Rolling Stones. But then on the flip side was always a dud sort of song. So he said, that's what it's like, this material enjoyment. You want something, but the concomitant package, you've got to get the whole package. You get the good one, but you also get the bad one on the back. So that's the way it is, you have to take the whole package. In this material world, you get the whole package. And if you're out there to try and enjoy materially, you have to take the suffering that's also going to come with that. To avoid that, you just simply serve Krishna. If one's intention is to get me, I want to get something from a relationship, from a situation, from a possession, I want, instead of giving, instead of the intention being giving it to the Supreme Lord, the result is going to be suffering. So in Krishna consciousness, we do everything for Krishna. And if we do everything for Krishna, you can be assured he's never going to hurt you. He's never going to disappoint you. He's never ever going to let you down. So many times we do things for others, for our own pleasure, and we can be let down. But Krishna will never let us down. He's omniscient. He knows everything. He's everywhere. And he's totally reciprocative to everything that we've done. So if we serve him, he'll always be there for us. So the next point, verse here, was a person should be attentive and grave and never lazy or morose. Mastering the yoga procedures of breathing and sitting properly, one should practice fixing the mind on me at dawn, noon, sunset, and thus gradually the mind should be completely absorbed in me. So the first point, a person should be attentive, grave, and never lazy or morose. Now we as devotees have to watch this, because this is a subtle form of Maya. To be lazy and morose. And some people may say, I'm in the mode of goodness, Prabhu. No, that doesn't carry. Prabhu, you're lazy. You've got to do more for Krishna. You have to actually really push it. We can do things. And we can't be morose. If a person is morose, you have to check yourself. Why am I morose? Because I have desires for myself. Somebody is affecting me, or something is affecting me, or my service is affecting me. you can't allow moroseness to come in. It is a very debilitating disease to be morose or to entertain moroseness, to be moody. It's not part of being Krishna conscious. If you are moody, if you are morose, then make a check. Why am I depressed? Why am I feeling depressed? And sometimes that can happen. It's a natural thing within a lady's life, and also men. Men also have times when, due to the hormone imbalance or something, or you've eaten too much prasadam or something, you feel a little... So you have to pick it up. And the way you pick it up is just do more service. Prabhupada could never handle people being around him that were morose. He had one servant that was morose all the time. And he turned around to him and said, "Why are you so morose? Go home to your mother." He couldn't handle it. And there's nothing worse than being around somebody that is mopey and morose. So we have to check that. We always have to check ourselves. And we also have to check the fact that we don't allow laziness to come into our lives. It can be easily done as devotees. "Oh Prabhu, I've got so much service. Don't ask me to do anything more. I'm so busy." And in your heart of hearts, you know, actually, I could have helped out with that. And we're all guilty of it. We're all in the same boat. So we have to adjust. We have to always be attentive. It says here a person should be attentive and grave. Grave means not that you walk around like a mopey old, "Oh, I'm so grave. I'm so serene. I'm so in the mode of good." No. Grave means you understand that everything you do is for the service of Krishna. That's what the gravity is, that you're so fixed that "I just want to please Krishna." And you're attentive to your own actions. You have to really be mindful. Am I falling into a lazy... Because we're conditioned. You know, Mum would ask us to do the dishes and say, "Oh no, Mum, I've got so much homework to do." "Okay, darling." You know, "Ah, that worked great, I got out of that." So much conditioning has gone on in our lives. The boss has asked us to, "Can you work over tonight?" "Oh no, I've got a very important person coming for dinner." You know. So it's there within our conditioning that we automatically take a lazy way out. But the true thing is that we address it and we become attentive. If we can do it, if we keep in our mind we only want to please and make Krishna happy, then yes, Prabhu, I can do this. I can help. And if you can't do it, well then obviously you can't. But generally, what is it they say, that a person that has a lot on his plate is the person you approach for some to get something done, because you know that they will always try to strive for doing as much as they possibly can. So we as devotees have to watch out that we don't become lazy fellows, as Prabhupada used to say. We do not want lazy fellows. You know, we become active and attentive in serving the Supreme Lord. Then, the next point, it says, mastering the yoga process, procedures of breathing and sitting properly, one should practice fixing the mind. Again, this is again being attentive. Attentive when we're chanting our rounds. Attentive when we're doing our service. Attentive when we're reading. Like Korma Prabhu was saying to me when he was here recently, you know, he does this process of reading a verse of Bhagavad Gita and a verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. But to maintain his attentiveness, he writes notes on every verse. Irrespective of whether you think, "Oh, this is something new," and write a note on it. No. Every verse, like we've just read a few verses, just write a couple of notes. By writing, you're actually stimulating the brain to really absorb the message that you've just got. So being attentive is really important. And the next part is, Hari Bol Prabhu, sitting properly and breathing properly, you know. When we're chanting our rounds, making sure that our posture is correct. If we're sitting properly, have our back straight. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, your back should be straight. It doesn't matter if you can't sit cross-legged properly or in a half lotus or whatever, but your back should be straight. You never slouch and start chanting that way. That's not being attentive, because it's a very important thing that you're doing. So, and then the final point that was made here, one should practice fixing the mind on me, Krishna says, at dawn, noon and sunset. So this is why we have our Gayatri mantra also, that at dawn we say our Gayatri. For those that are brahminical, we say our Gayatri at dawn, and we say our Gayatri at noon, and we say our Gayatri in the evening at sunset. It brings us back to understanding that life is meant to serve Krishna. But irrespective of whether one is a Brahmin or not, or even initiated, We should get into the practice of actually remembering Krishna in the morning. We all do that. We've got the morning program. At lunchtime, just taking time out to either read a couple of verses of Bhagavad Gita. Just anything. Just to remember, you know, listen to a lecture by your Guru Maharaj. And the same in the evening. Just come together and do a little reading. It doesn't have to be a lot. But just to again focus on the Supreme Lord. That actually my existence revolves around me serving Krishna. 100%. So this is really important. This attentiveness. And then follow the directions of your Guru. And your Diksha Gurus. And your Siksha Gurus. And the older devotees. And who can help you get through these different processes, through these different phases in our lives. Even as we're growing older, we take shelter of the older devotees to help us through this period in our lives. And the potency of the mantras that are given are really important. This is one thing that we have to understand, that the potency of these mantras, whether they are the mantras that you read, because these are mantras also when you read Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, the mantras that we're chanting in our Gayatri, the mantras that we're chanting when we're chanting our rounds, these mantras are representations of God in the form of sound. So they're really, really potent, and they have a purifying effect. They are authorized purifying effect. And with the guidance of a purified guide, a spiritual master, they can be very potent in allowing us to develop our love for Krishna faster and faster. But these mantras, the potency will produce great results if they are given in the right parampara. If they're given in the parampara. Like, we're doing so much with meeting people from different faiths and different religions and also New Age groups. And we talk about mantras and sometimes people come up and say, oh yes, I read this mantra in this book and it's a very wonderful mantra and I'm chanting that at the moment. Actually, it's described in the Shastras that unless a mantra is given by a pure devotee, by a devotee in the line of disciplic succession, there's not much potency in the mantra. So we need to actually have a purified person giving us that mantra, a pramika bhakta, a person that's 100% thinking of Krishna all the time, to give us the mantra, to give us that potency, and then it will produce prema in the heart of a devotee. The example that's given in the Shastras is that of a banyan tree. You see the big banyan trees, there's one in the botanical gardens, and if you go to India you see many big banyan trees. And the banyan tree has a little small seed. So this huge big tree comes from this little tiny, tiny seed. Now if you place that seed in the ground and you cover it and you water it, it won't grow. It won't fructify into the tree. A sparrow or a little bird has to pick up the seed first, eat it, right, digest it, and then once it's been digested and it passes it, and then it goes into the earth, then the banyan tree sprouts up. So similarly it is with mantras, these specific powerful mantras, when they are given by the spiritual master, or anyone in the disciplic succession, then the mantra has potency. So we have to be very mindful of that and help one another in that area. So the disciplic succession has to be clearly understood of why we have that. So it's the potency of the spiritual master. So then the final translation that was here, the final verse was, the actual yoga system as taught by my devotees, headed by Sunak Kumara, is simply this. Having withdrawn the mind from all other objects, one should directly and appropriately absorb themselves in me. So again, it boils down to that we have to hear directly from our guru and from our spiritual teachers, and we have to 100% fix our mind on the Supreme Lord in everything that we do, focus on that, and then the enjoyment, the transcendental enjoyment that will come from that will far override any semblance of enjoyment from material things. We don't need any of it anymore, and we just want to be totally fixed in the service to the Guru and Krishna. So it's an interesting topic, this whole thing, and I find it fascinating to grow older and witness the changes and the permutations and how we have to fix ourselves in service to the Lord more and more and more. You think as you get older you'd have to do less, but actually you have to do more because you have to cope with this old age process. So, any comments or questions at all, Prabhu? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, always think of me. Sometimes, though, in our, as is pointed out here, Krishna is pointing out that, you know, you have to fix your mind on me at dawn, noon, and sunset. Basically, he's saying that, yeah, always think of me, never forget me. You know, but because we are conditioned, and because we can get involved with different services and so on and so forth, it's like a gentle reminder to actually have something concrete. You know, that, okay, it is now evening time, let me focus on an aspect, let me get to an aspect of Krishna consciousness by reading mantras from the Srimad Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita, saying our Gayatri, doing some extra rounds, just really focusing and meditating on the Supreme Lord, and then you again go into your activity, still thinking of Krishna, but it's like a booster. It's like a vitamin pill, you know, it's like getting an extra booster during midday and lunch. Our service and our duty is to always think of Krishna 24 hours a day. But because we're conditioned and we get involved in our service, sometimes it's good to just stop and repeat some mantras and some shastra and fix the mind again, okay, and then continue on. So they're transcendental vitamin pills. Give you a boost. Is that okay? Any other comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Yes, on this point also, I'd like to add.
Yeah.
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if you can't think of me, perform
that's right.
Principle, can't definitely work for me.
That's right. Exactly.
I want to make another comment on what you just said.
Yeah.
How giving that terrible impression on people
yep.
in general.
Yep.
That's, Uddhava was telling me, we just talked 2-3 days ago, he was telling me, one lady who was about to get initiation from Prabhupada, but then she picked out she didn't get initiation because she thought she would be obliged to get married. She didn't really want to get married. But anyway, so one of the devoted brahmacharis in Sydney, he was in Bhutta tradition, and he came across a tall boy. And apparently it was his mom.
Really?
Yeah. And he was already chanting, and he was already there with Krishna consciousness and all that. So the mom wasn't against Krishna. She was terrible.
Yeah. Amazing, isn't it?
Interesting point. And now it's associated with devotees and he's really into it.
It's amazing how the tentacles of Krishna consciousness spread throughout the community. In one sense, you know, like even these ladies that I was talking to yesterday, when I was talking about the devotees get their ecstasy, they were asking, when did I join, blah, 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 all that kind of thing. And they were asking, what do you get out of chanting in the streets? And I said, well, I get bliss out of that. It's really good fun, you know, to chant and dance in the street without being intoxicated. It's just like so much fun calling on the name of God. And she said, I remember it when I was a child. And children are so innocent that they pick up. When I was a child, I always used to like coming to the city just to hear the Hare Krishna's chanting. And she said that you'd hear off in the distance somewhere. Mum and Dad would take me to the city. And then you'd hear off in the distance. And her heart would fill up with joy. Oh, we're going to see the Haris, you know. And then another lady picked up and she said, yeah, I remember Mum and Dad taking me to the Moomba float, to the Moomba procession, and there'd be a float coming through, and the devotees' float was always the happiest. The devotees, you know, that's what Prabhupada said, you know, I've converted hippies to happies. And that's it. I mean, a devotee is, if they're 100% engaged in Krishna's service, and 100% thinking of how I can serve Krishna, they will naturally be happy. Krishna reciprocates. If you're not happy, then you have to really check, okay, how am I not serving Krishna? How am I not keeping Krishna in my mind all the time? You know, and then ask for advice. Seek advice. Don't sit in your room by yourself and think, oh, I'm so... Go out and talk to somebody that you can trust and reveal your mind and ask, how is it that you are so happy in your Krishna consciousness? Ask, and then you will see. You know, it's very, very important. The last thing, in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, there's a saying, the wise understand sense pleasure begets suffering in three ways. First is the direct consequence of their enjoyment, and that is parinama. Second is in the form of anticipation of its loss. So, I've got this enjoyment now, I'm never going to lose it. And that's called tapa. And third, in the form of new cravings, impressions embedded in the mind, and that is called samskara. So, it's like, you know, holding on to things. So, there are these different things. The wise understand that sense pleasure begets nothing but suffering. So, be wise. There is nothing that material sense gratification is ever going to give you pleasure with. It's only by serving the Supreme Lord. And if you serve the Supreme Lord, He is the King. He is the Master. He is the Lord of all Lords. And you're His servant, part and parcel of Him. You can enjoy the kingdom. You can enjoy being with Him. You know, there's nothing greater than to be with devotees. And that's why when we go out on a Harinam or we're doing different things, it's so enjoyable. Just like I was saying, I don't know if I mentioned in the last class, we had a birthday party for Bhakti. You know, it was her 50th birthday party. And it was a devotee party. And everything was centered around Krishna. We had the big picture of the deities and so on and so forth. And we had prasadam, heaps of prasadam. Anyway, we invited some people that were not necessarily devotees along, especially one lady who is a very dear friend of us, and she's a very loving person. And she'd never been to a Hare Krishna event ever. And she came to this party and we had Krishna conscious games. Who was at the party? Was anybody here? Oh yeah, Hari Bol. And we had Krishna conscious games and everybody was laughing and carrying on. And you know, photos were taken and everybody had a ball. And anyway, later she sent an email and she said, I could never have imagined that a person could have a party with no alcohol, no meat eating, and no foul language, and have such a good time. She said, I'll invite the Haris to all my parties from now on. So, you know, Krishna consciousness, you can make every situation happy just by thinking of the Supreme Lord and doing service to Him and thinking, how can I make Krishna happy? Not me, how can I make Krishna happy? If you make Krishna happy, you'll automatically be happy. If you see a devotee ecstatically engaged in their service, you know they're making Krishna happy because they're happy. And they don't want any position. They don't want any aggrandizement. They don't want any appreciation for the things. If you come up to somebody and you say, oh, Prabhu, you cook such a nice offering. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Krishna is the most important thing. Did Krishna enjoy it? You know, that's really where it's at. And then you get that satisfaction that you know within your heart, intuitively, that Krishna is pleased with you. Like yesterday, I knew Krishna was pleased with me. I tried to teach these ladies something about Krishna consciousness. And you could see the reaction in their eyes that it was making an effect. And they enjoyed the prasadam. And I knew that Krishna was pleased. And so you have that sense of well-being and contentment. Yeah, I did something. Or we went out and did Sankirtan. Or we go into book distribution. You know, and you've actually made some attempt. You've tried. And you made some attempt. You know that when you go to bed at night time, I think I please Krishna today. Can you sleep easy? And no worries, no suffering, no nothing. Nothing like what the materialist goes through. Does that make sense? Any other comments or questions at all, Prabhu? Thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
Fired up and a lot of passion and so many things. And now as you get older, you're much more mature and you have
Well, that's an interesting question. What would I do?
What would you have kind of added or kind of, yeah, basically kind of added while you were still a young devotee? You have the maturity.
Okay, yeah. I would have developed more intimate relationships with my God brothers and sisters and with my other and with other devotees. In the early days, and we discussed that as well, there was a level of fanaticism. This religious, you know, fervor developed into, in a sense, fanaticism. And if a person wasn't really up to scratch, you would sort of, well, they're blue. And I would check myself and be more giving to other people, which immaturity I feel is really necessary for me to do now for myself and for people that I'm with. But in the past, I guess we were a little aloof and a little in our own little world, doing our own service type of thing, instead of being more compassionate and giving. I would strive to be more compassionate. It was evident also in people when they raised their children, you know, especially for young women like yourselves and young men who are going to have kids. If I have any regrets, was that I didn't spend enough time with my kids because of this passion of pushing on the movement. And I would give more time to raise my children and bring them into more Krishna conscious association. That's the only regret. There's not many regrets, but yeah, this point of compassion is one that I'd really follow through on. But the, you know, like you know, you're saying that as you get older, you lack the passion. You know, the passion is still within your heart, but the body just doesn't respond. You know, it's like if we go out on a Harinam now. In the past, you could go on a Harinam for hours. You know, and you'd be roaring, and the next morning you're up again. You know. But with old age, it's just like, you know, you go, oh my God, your legs are sore. And but in your heart, I mean, in my heart, I'm still a 25-year-old devotee, you know. Just still, it's there in your heart. You still want to do all those things, but you just can't. So then you take a different tack. You do a different way. But yeah, if I had to do again, the only regret is that I would be more compassionate and more tolerant and try and be more friendly to my God brothers and sisters and to the community that I'm teaching. Yeah. Does that make sense? Alright. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.